Across the Pacific and network and around the nation, this is Free Speech Radio News for Thursday, September 11, 2003. From Cancun, Mexico at the WTO meetings, I'm Deepa Fernandez. We commemorate the second anniversary of the attacks on the World Trade Center. We go to memorials in New York and Washington and to Pakistan and Afghanistan, where the so-called war on terrorism began 2 years ago. Also from the WTO, while ministers negotiate agriculture issues in Cancun, before the dramatic suicide of a South Korean farmer who stabbed himself on top of police barricades saying the WTO kills farmers, FSRN producer Kutta Mesta was one of the last journalists to speak with the rice farmer before he died. But first, these news headlines.
I'm Randy Zimmerman with the headlines for Free Speech Radio News. Today, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld said he doesn't see any reason to move quickly on military trials for the people picked up during the invasion of Afghanistan, now being held at the U.S. military base on Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. According to Rumsfeld, the prisoners being held without the support of international law or access to attorneys are just fine, as long as they are off the streets. Yesterday at the National Press Club, two activists with Code Pink, an organization of women committed to peace, told Rumsfeld what they think of his job performance.
Within weeks of being attacked, coalition forces were responding in Afghanistan to remove the Taliban and put al-Qaeda on the run in a matter of months.
Mr. Rumsfeld, you're fired. Your foreign policy is based on lies. The war in Iraq was unjust and illegal, and the occupation is immoral. There are U.S. soldiers dying in Iraq.
Go home!
The two protesters, Kristen Arant and Victoria Cunningham, were barred from ever going to the National Press Club. A small grassroots coalition gathered in front of the White House today to protest their outrage against U.S. foreign policy in Iraq. Kwang Fu Trin reports from D.C.
Wearing a mask of George Bush, David Barrows paced back and forth in front of the White House today in protest of the U.S. government's policies in the Middle East. Across the street, 10 protesters sat on the curb, chanting the words, "Bring them home now." Current regulations require gatherings of 25 people or more to have a permit. The D.C. Anti-War Network kept their numbers low so they would not have to apply. David Barrows charges the pursuit of money by corporate CEOs is at the expense of American soldiers.
This government of the United States is run for the profit of a few CEOs who do not care about soldiers, no matter how they pontificate about American soldiers. They're just their toys that they play with.
The activists plan on having a larger protest at DuPont Circle tonight at 6 p.m. For Free Speech Radio News in Washington, D.C., I am Kwang Fu Trin.
Farmers, unionists, and activists remembered a South Korean farmer who stabbed himself at yesterday's protest at the World Trade Organization meeting. They also reflected on the events of September 11th in the United States and Chile. From the Cancun Independent Media Center, Renee Feltz reports.
Trade, hunger, biotechnology, and the effects of the WTO on women and children were topics of talks today between farmers and unionists. Some attendees to seminars sported bruises and black eyes received when police threw chunks of concrete back at protesters during confrontations at the barricades surrounding the start of WTO trade talks yesterday. On the anniversary of September 11th, many of those gathered for protest here will mark the anniversary of the 1973 Chilean coup, in which thousands of people died at the hands of state forces. Later tonight, campesinos plan to march to the site of yesterday's protest and relocate their encampment at what many here are calling Ground Zero. They'll be joined by 45 Koreans just released from detention in Mexico City. Reports on these events can be heard via a live 24-hour radio stream webcast at the Cancun Independent Media Center's website. From Cancun Independent Media Center, I'm Renee Feltz for Free Speech Radio News.
We'll have more remembrances of September 11th coming up. One poor community in Soweto is fighting the installation of water meters in their neighborhood, saying access to water is a basic human right. More from Naeem Jinnah in South Africa.
Seven community activists arrested in Piri, Soweto 3 days ago still languish in the notorious Sun City jail after they were denied bail. Their trial comes up in 2 weeks. The seven were among a group of 13 that was arrested after they protested the attempts by the Johannesburg Metro Council and a private company, Johannesburg Water, to install water meters at households in the area. The protests were led by the Soweto Electricity Crisis Committee, or SECC, comprised of residents of the township that are opposed to the cutting off of electricity to poor households. The installation of water meters in poor areas is an attempt to force residents to pay for their water or risk having it cut off and them taken to court. Most of these residents simply can't afford to pay. Johannesburg Water recently obtained a court interdict against those resisting the meter installations. The SECC says it expects more of its members to be arrested as they continue their opposition and demand what they call one of the most basic human rights, the right to water. For Free Speech Radio News, this is Naeem Jinnah in Johannesburg.
Civil rights activist Marie Foster died over the weekend at the age of 85. Foster is well known for launching Selma, Alabama's voting rights movement in the mid-1960s and was brutally beaten by state troopers for her work. The event, which became known as Bloody Sunday, was on national television and shifted the epicenter of the civil rights movement to Selma. Despite swollen knees from the beating, Marie Foster marched with the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. to Montgomery, laying the groundwork for the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1965. She's also one of the courageous eight on the Dallas County Voters League who convinced King to go to Selma to lead voter registration drives. I'm Randy Zimmerman for Free Speech Radio News.
Today is the second anniversary of the attacks in which two hijacked planes brought down the World Trade Center towers in New York City. Another plane crashed into the Pentagon, while still another plane crashed into a Pennsylvania field. Over 3,000 people died on that day. Since that time, the United States has retaliated by invading two countries that denied any connection to the 9/11 events, resulting in thousands of more deaths. At home, the U.S. Congress passed the Patriot Act, giving the government unprecedented authority to investigate its citizens. Also, over 1,000 immigrants have been detained without a right to legal counsel. President George Bush is using the second anniversary of 9/11 to garner support for broadening the Patriot Act. Bush yesterday said the first act did not go far enough and that he favored further expansions by allowing federal authorities to issue subpoenas without going to a grand jury, hold suspects without bail, and to seek the death penalty in more cases. Meanwhile, peace groups throughout the country are observing the second anniversary of 9/11 by not focusing on hate and fear, but by using the anniversary to be mindful of creating a better world. Mitch Jeserich reports on some of those events happening in the middle of the nation's capital.
To commemorate 9/11, President Bush has indicated that the Patriot Act, passed by Congress just a short time after the terrorist attacks, does not go far enough in protecting U.S. citizens. Jeffrey Fogel, the legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, says Bush is moving in the opposite direction of the rest of the country.
The act is being criticized by conservatives for violating the privacy rights of Americans. It's being criticized by Republican members of Congress because the Justice Department has never come clean with what they have been doing under the Patriot Act, nor have they been able to identify why these measures are so necessary in terrorism investigations.
People don't know where to go.
As President Bush and his cadre use the September 11th anniversary to let the world know the war of terror has just begun, Muslim, Sikh, Jewish, and Christian groups held a vigil Wednesday night at the U.S. Capitol, using the anniversary to commemorate all the people who have lost their lives to terrorism and to promote hope for a peaceful world. Dr. Radhuan Singh is with Interfaith Conference of Metropolitan, D.C.
America's diversity and multicultural mosaic is a powerful tool in working toward building levels of mutual respect and acceptance. In this nation, we can see the diversity in our own neighborhoods, and we can use that as the beginning to accepting our differences, but celebrating our common humanity.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Ar-Rahman Ar-Rahim, Maliki Yawm al-Din.
Rabia Ahmed, with the Council on American Islamic Relations, talks of what it has been like for her to live as a Muslim in a post-9/11 era.
And with the attacks, there was, I felt a lot of tension because I was the only Muslim in my class, an invisible Muslim at that. And so, you know, there was a little silence and people, you know, were a little reserved. But I made it a point to speak out and let people know what Islam and what a Muslim is really about. And in return, I had a lot of people come up to me and you know, express their support and solidarity and, you know, letting me know that if I ever need their help or protection that, you know, that they're there. The negative things is that, you know, there's been so many people, and especially working for like a nonprofit civil rights organization, I see a lot of it. We get complaints every day about people being discriminated against because they're not allowed to wear their headscarf to work, or they're not being, you know, they're not getting jobs, or, you know, there's hate crimes that are occurring.
The Buddhist spiritual leader Thich Nhat Hanh, who is in Washington, D.C., to spend some time with congressional members, says the U.S. policy to wipe out so-called terrorism is actually fueling it.
The cause of terrorism is in the wrong perceptions of people. They have wrong perceptions on themselves and on us, and we do have wrong perceptions on us and on them. Our political leaders have to learn the art of listening deeply and compassion to the people we think to be our enemies.
Both Osama bin Laden and Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld agree that the war of terror has just begun. That message indicates peace activists have a lot of marching and protests to do if they're going to conquer war with love. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Mitch Jezerich at the Capitol.
Meanwhile, in New York City, the day was commemorated with both memorials and protests. 2 years after the attacks, residents of Lower Manhattan continue to battle health concerns and to fight efforts to displace them. The Lower Manhattan Development Corporation, or LMDC, is a joint state-city agency responsible for distributing more than $2 billion of federal funds to businesses and individuals in Lower Manhattan, which were affected by the September 11 attacks. Yet, as Gail Walker reports from WBAI, many people have been left out of the compensation. Reading for Gail Walker is Simba Russo.
Many New Yorkers living and working in Lower Manhattan continue to struggle for compensation. Leah Geronimo is one of them and is a community organizer who volunteers with both the National Mobilization Against Sweatshops and the Chinese Staff and Workers Association. Geronimo says the town hall meeting was organized as a result of at least two meetings held by the LMDC that were closed to the public.
Apparently, they raised $2.7 billion. Federal anti-poverty money was designated for people, again, who were hardest hit after 9/11, some of it being dedicated to small business. And what ended up happening was they didn't do any outreach for people. In addition to that, they came up with their own zones that were not under the originally mandated zone from 14th Street South. They made zones that went no further than Delancey Street, and then they arbitrarily denied people and made the application process very difficult. What they did, in essence, was guarantee a way to discriminate against lower-income people.
With the number of eligible applicants reduced by the LMDC process, the organization is now saying it has a $1.3 billion surplus and is using those funds to provide what they call affordable housing. Those eligible for these funds must live on the Lower East Side with incomes between $50,000 and $85,000 per year. But according to Geronimo, there is no surplus. Instead of providing relief, Geronimo says the funds are now being used to accelerate the displacement of longtime residents of Lower Manhattan.
This money was given to them specifically to help people, and they excluded people. For example, there are people who don't have leases for whatever reason. And if you don't have a lease, you can't be a recipient of the money. If you live in a shelter, you're not considered a legal resident of the area, so you're not being given the money. There are all these different people that this is happening to. So it really isn't a surplus because there are thousands of families down in the Lower East Side that have not received any of this money.
Health continues to be one of the most pressing issues for those who survive 9/11 and live in Lower Manhattan. Last month, it was revealed that EPA claims that the air around Ground Zero was safe was a lie orchestrated by the White House. And residents have now vowed to continue to fight for compensation and against displacement. For Free Speech Radio News in New York, I'm Simba Russo.
Also in New York, commemorations at the so-called Ground Zero site began early this morning. Jackson Allers brings us this collage of voices remembering September 11, 2001.
Names etched on the head of a pin. One name spanning a bridge, another undergoing a tunnel. A blue name needled into the skin. Names of citizens, workers, mothers and fathers.
Scott Mitchell Schertzer, Sean Schilk, and our father Joseph Patrick Shea, our uncle Daniel James Shea, and our friend Aniel Daugherty. We miss you and we love you.
The families of the dead and all Americans deserve some accountability from our government for its failure to protect us on 9/11.
We remember lives lost. We remember the heroic deeds. We remember the compassion, the decency of our fellow citizens on that terrible day.
Rudolph Bean.
You have a picture of Rondell Tankard.
We never received anything, you know, of hers of any kind, so closure is very, very hard. I'm going to be honest with me, you do not want to hear what I think. Because as far as I am concerned, just to sum it up, Bin Laden still lives, and all I keep hearing about is Saddam Hussein. As far as I'm concerned, catch one and finish that job, then go do the other.
Oh, my name is Robert. Okay, my sister was working at World Trade Center 1, and I'm here to mourn her because they never find nothing about her. I want revenge, and I think about sadness of who people over there who didn't know nothing either. And they feel sad. I feel sad for them, but I want revenge too.
Edward William Schulk.
Mark Evan Schirmeyer.
Claren Shelley Schwartz.
My name is Michael Scaretti. My business partner, Kashif Aftab. We are the founders of the Memorial Kite Project. We come from Pittsburgh, so Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. Because Somerset County is so close to us, we decided to do this just to express our sorrow and solidarity. When we think of a human form, we think of ourselves on the earth, and we think of the spiritual form and people that have passed, we look to the sky and think of heaven. So the string is what connects us.
Paul Bellenboyer. I'm personally not at all pleased with the national response, which is to, you know, make more holes in the ground and create more victims.
Susan Lee Schuler.
Violence is not the way. We cannot keep killing each other. We will either live together or die together. My name is Rabbi Lynn Gottlieb, and I'm one of the first 7 women to become a rabbi.
My name is Stephen Fustanellis. I'm in Astoria, Queens. With the war in general and the rebuilding and the compensation money and everything, just no progress whatsoever. Too many politicians involved, too many big heads talking at one time. One politician wants this, another politician wants that, and nothing will ever get built for a long time here.
Today is also the 30th anniversary of the other September 11, when democratically elected Chilean socialist president Salvador Allende was toppled in a US-backed coup led by Augusto Pinochet. The death of the coveted leader was the start of years of torture and the disappearance of thousands of Chileans. Although some 90 military personnel are being prosecuted in Chile for human rights abuses during the Pinochet regime, victims say the government is doing little to address human rights issues and are still seeking reparations. Victims are enraged that a human rights proposal put forth by Chilean President Lagos last month will grant immunity from prosecution to those providing information about the Pinochet-era human rights abuses. In this report by Pauline Bartolone, Chilean exiles in Berkeley, California reflect on the coup 30 years ago and why justice has still not been served in their country.
Viva Chile! Viva el pueblo! Viva los trabajadores!
September 11 is the day that changed the life of so many Chileans.
The government of this country promoted the coup in Chile in 1973.
Feña Torres and Héctor Salgado are two of more than a million Chileans forced into exile during the Pinochet-led dictatorship in Chile. Before the South American country turned to democracy in 1990, over 300,000 Chileans were tortured and detained for political reasons. Today, the whereabouts of over 1,000 disappeared persons are still unknown, and Héctor Salgado is still waiting for justice.
after 30 years, not many things have changed. The main problem that I think I have with the September 11 in Chile, which is to find justice for the human rights abuses in Chile.
Salgado is the U.S.-based spokesperson for a group of family members of the disappeared in Chile who went on a hunger strike last month in protest of President Lagos's dealings with the human rights abuses under Pinochet. Chilean President Lagos announced a human rights proposal on August 12th entitled, "Without a Yesterday, There is No Tomorrow." The proposal, however, does not lift the 1978 amnesty law giving immunity to human rights violators. In response, a dozen sons and daughters of the disappeared went on a hunger strike for 20 days. Juan José Parada Ortiz was one of the Santiago-based hunger strikers and says the Lagos proposal is unacceptable.
The government has to make an absolute commitment to justice. They have to incorporate the Constitution and all of the international treaties regarding human rights. This would be the only way that justice could be incorporated, and the government has to work harder so that the criminals are made responsible for the human rights abuses and so that our disappeared family members are found.
Meanwhile, victims of the repressive Pinochet regime living in the U.S. remember America's role in the coup that changed their lives. CAA documents reveal that U.S. funding to curtail Allende's presidency started as early as 1964. In 1970, the U.S. funded the military opposition's attempt to sabotage Allende's inauguration, poured millions of dollars into right-wing media, and subsidized a strike of 35,000 transportation workers meant to destabilize the country 1 month before the coup. Although Chilean exile Quique Cruz is commemorating two 9/11s today, he says the two events have more contradictions than parallels.
What we suffered in Chile was a state terrorism, and state terrorism that was supported systematically by the government of the United States. And that, I think, is a really important notion, and it's a really good opportunity to make us think about what is terrorism.
Actions are planned at Chilean embassies in Sweden, Portugal, and Mexico today to protest President Lagos's stance on human rights in Chile. For Free Speech Radio News, I am Pauline Bartolone, reporting from Berkeley.
Agriculture issues continue to dominate the World Trade Organization meetings, both inside and outside the gathering of top negotiators from 146 countries. Inside, a group of four of the poorest African countries, Benin, Burkina Faso, Chad, and Mali, have asked the US to end its $3.2 billion subsidies to its 25,000 cotton farmers, which they say have destroyed the livelihoods of 10 million African farmers. Key European countries, including Germany and Britain, are supporting them in their battle, just as 21 developing countries are demanding that both the US and the EU cancel all agriculture subsidies. Outside the official talks, thousands are attending alternative agriculture fairs, symposiums, and protests. These protests have been dominated by the dramatic suicide of a South Korean farmer who stabbed himself on top of a police barricade, saying the WTO kills farmers. FSRN producer Kata Mester was one of the last journalists to speak with the rice farmer before he died. She files this report from Cancun.
He died. His dad.
I know.
How? Yeah. He cut his belly by himself to express his strong will against WTO.
And now
yeah,
he's dead.
He is a farmer.
As thousands gathered in downtown Cancun for the Indigenous Farmers March, some 50 Korean trade activists prepared a Korean ceremonial march. From the crowd emerged Lee Yung-hae, the former president of the Korean National Future Farmers and Fishermen's Association, one of the country's main farming lobby groups. Lee was also a former South Korean lawmaker. Moments before his tragic death, Lee spoke to FSRN.
I am a farmer, Korea.
What kind of farmer are you?
My farmer.
Are you?
Rice.
Rice.
What are the big problems with the WTO policy? Lee then pointed to an article from the April 2003 issue of Korea Agri-Food. It detailed a two-month hunger strike Lee began last February in front of the Geneva headquarters of the WTO. In the article, he says, "Here in Geneva, at the front gate, I'm crying out my words that have boiled for so long in my body. For whom do you negotiate now?" he asks. Outside of Cancun's General Hospital, the group of 50 Korean labor activists who traveled to Cancun expressed their shock at the loss of their colleague and called on the official South Korean delegation to leave the conference. The issue of agriculture subsidies is the most contentious item on the table at the ministerial. Poor farmers argue the subsidies protect U.S. and European farmers, while making it impossible for farmers in Asia, Africa, and Latin America to compete. As tensions between riot police and demonstrators escalated outside of the ministerial, 8 kilometers away inside the WTO Convention Center, Mexican President Vicente Fox welcomed delegates from 146 nations during the opening ceremonies and acknowledged the demonstrations.
"We have opened a space for those groups that are legitimately proposing economic alternatives. We hear the ideas and proposals that right in this very moment they are pronouncing right outside. It is important that we find a strategy of global development in which we articulate the competitiveness and efficiency with the quality of opportunities."
After Lee's death, President Fox called Lee a globophobe, the term that in Mexico has been used to describe those protesting the policies of the WTO. Following the suicide, Nobel Peace Prize winner from Guatemala, Rigoberto Menchú, spoke to a local Cancun television station.
"I'm very sorry that this happened, but I'm also very sorry that the World Trade Organization meetings have put so many barriers between people and official events. This also upsets me because we have to have dialogue. We have to have confidence in each other so there are no more deaths on our side. It is sad also because I'm sure everything we have planned for today may not have been heard by the whole world. We are talking about health care for everyone. We are talking about justice and equality, and that they don't use the rich countries' rules for the poor countries. Because if they do this, there will never be equality or justice."
Hours after Lee's death, his Korean colleagues are now holding vigil meters from where Lee died. Mexican authorities have indicated they may deport the group. For Free Speech Radio News in Cancun, I'm Kata Mester.
For more information from our WTO coverage in Cancun, you can visit the website of CorpWatch at www.corpwatch.org. That's www.corpwatch.org. Also, FSRN's website has a full archive of all our WTO coverage. Free Speech Radio News is produced at Pacifica Stations WBAI in New York and KPFA in Berkeley and community radio station WMNF in Tampa, Florida. The newscast is produced by Kata Mester, Simba Russo, with Aaron Glantz. Headlines editors are Randy Zimmerman and Nell Abram. DC editor is Josh Chaffin. Our technical production team is Jade Pageant-Seekins, Pauline Bardalone, and Lindsay Benedict. Web support from Vanessa Tate and Leslie Holmes. We also have technical assistance from our intern, Bob Stern. I'm Deepa Fernandez.